Welcome in to the latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Breton. Go by SEC Mike on the Twitters. And there he is, Chris Marler. Marler Monday. How many profanities over under are you going to say? 50, 60?
I don't fucking know, Mike. I mean, come on, brother.
How come your camera angle is different every time?
I thought this was the one that made me look slimmest, so...
Oh, okay. Mission accomplished.
Pretty big assholes about everything regarding my appearance or life, so figured I would just go with this.
Well, hey, I'm not complaining. This sounds good. You look good. You sound good. I was just curious if, you got kicked out or anything.
No. We're still over here. tough night on...
No, not we. You.
Oh, yeah, that's also true. Very true. It was a tough night over here for... one of our teams in the house, and then obviously the Baton Rouge people are pretty upset. But yeah, dude. Also, your hair looks—I can't get over how good your hair looks right now.
Thank you. I paid him to say that.
It's true. $12.
Hey, so what game stood out to you? How about are we getting six teams in the playoff? Where would you like to begin?
I gotta finish making a graphic for work, so why don't you stall for me? And then we can start after that. I don't think I get six teams in. It is interesting because if you talk about which SEC teams get in, I think the more realistic thing is to start with what teams outside the conference will be in. And that's where my biggest concern is, because it's like, I think Texas Tech is very good. They don't play anybody, but I think they're very good. Yeah. I think there's a couple of other teams like Ohio State and Indiana. I still think they're the best two teams in the country. I think Bama's good. I think Bama's the third best team in the SEC right now. They might be fourth considering how bad they are at running the football, and stopping the run especially. But I don't know, man. I think that those four teams seem like they're destined to get in. If Vandy wins out, they're still in there. If Texas wins out, they're still in there.
Oh, yeah. Well, we get to Vandy. Let's start with Vandy, because who in the hell starts with old Vandy these days? But, huge win over my favorite. Hugh Freeze, I didn't think he could lose twice on Saturday or last week, but he did, because Auburn looks like a new team. They look like a damn team possessed without his dumb ass on the sidelines. But be that as it may, Chris, Vanderbilt goes on the road and beats Auburn, or should be at home, 45-38. But it kind of felt like a road game because half the damn crowd was Auburn people, or maybe even more than half. It seemed like every time they got a call, the fans were booing. But
yeah,
man, Diego, is it crazy to say he's probably not going to win the Heisman, but I think he should be up for it?
No, I think it's, dude, that performance that he had against Auburn was incredible. And I think Auburn fans finally got to see. I know that like they lost to him last year and all that kind of shit. I know, but there's like, I feel like each week we find a new layer of how good this kid really is. He's just so annoyingly efficient. He's just constantly falling forward. He doesn't make a ton of mistakes. I thought he was great in this game. And listen, like, this is a bad Auburn secondary at times. It's a great, great front seven and a really good front four. They have been great. And I tell you what's going to happen with Diego, especially if they went out, dude. If they went out and they end up being 10-2, there's no path for them, I don't think, to get to Atlanta. But if they're 10-2, he will be invited to New York. And they'll look at that Texas game specifically. And especially if Texas ends up, reeling off a couple wins at the end of the season, or they beat Georgia or Texas A&M, no one's going to remember that it was 34-10 going into the fourth quarter. Everyone is going to remember that he put up 300-something yards in the in total offense this week, though, man. 489 yards of offense against that defense, four touchdowns, no turnovers. I think on the year he's at 28 touchdowns, five interceptions. Just an incredible job. And I think him winning the Heisman seems a little bit far fetched because of how good Mendoza and Julian Sain have been, but he should definitely be in the conversation.
Who have they played, Chris? They haven't played an SEC schedule. I'll just tell you that now.
They played Texas, didn't they?
No. I'm saying those big little 10 teams. Oh, they played.
Yeah. Okay.
You're getting close again. Yeah. Are you surprised that Auburn just went gangbusters here and finally realized they have talent all over the offense?
Man, that whole thing with Hugh Freeze, it was like, it's even more infuriating now than it was a couple weeks ago. Like, that offense is just so much better. And he's supposed to be this offensive guru. And it's like, what the fuck happened where he could not figure out how to do this? Like Jackson Arnold being the starting quarterback for that long, Ashton Daniels not getting a shot until, like, you know, week whatever in the month of November. Like, it's just, it was even more frustrating, I think, to watch how successful they were offensively at the end. Now, it's now you're in this limbo stage for Auburn where it's like, this team has to learn how to win again. And that's the frustrating part, because, like, that would have been a huge win. But it's a team that clearly has so much, not regression, but they have such a mental block of figuring out how to actually win football games that it was tough for them to close it out. So that part was hard to watch. I will tell you this, Auburn fans, I don't know. Auburn fans were, I think, pretty responsive to this. I think outside of Auburn fans, it was pretty simple to see what DJ Durkin was doing in the post-game press conference. Like, when he was like, and that's what Auburn's here to win championships. We're not here to come close and ball. And, like, dude, shut the fuck up. Like, you guys have not won. You've won two championships all time.
They're close.
In real life. And then you made up another seven in the offseason. One of the championships you won, you were on probation, by the way. Just want to throw that out there. 1957, they were on probation that season.
Didn't they just win seven national championships?
They did. It's hard to imagine they fired a coach that led them to seven national championships. That's the standard at Auburn. That's the standard. No, I think that it was really awesome to see. And maybe DJ Durkin is the guy, but it did feel a lot like it was a not political. It was like he was kind of politicking and grandstanding to, like, the crowd of, like, hey, I, like, this is the Auburn standard. This is what we want. These Auburn men and that whole he bought into delivering that message because I think he was trying to figure out a way to have his name be in the hat for this job. And it should be, by the way. It definitely should be. I think he'd be a great hire. But I thought he did a great job. Like, press conference aside, I thought they did a great job. I thought it was great to see. He said something, man, that made me so fucking happy, even though I'm not an Auburn fan. What? What does that mean?
Marla reminds me of a botched Build-A-Bear, says Brodo.
I think the thing that – yes, that is very true. I don't understand what is
happening. Marla reminds me of Crab Rangoon.
Okay. I had crabs one time, dude. No, so I think that the thing that
sorry about that.
I think that the thing that is shocking to me about Auburn that he finally said that made me very happy, which was we made a concerted effort or conscious effort as, like, a coaching staff that we were like, Cam Coleman's one of the best players in America. Just get him the fucking ball. Like, get him the ball. And they did. And then, like, he was out for, like, an injury and came back in and made two fucking catches in a row to tie it up. And it was like, dude, it was awesome. It was awesome.
You know what else is awesome? We got some awesome cousins. Marla, shout out the legend, JR, gifted another membership. Let's give him his little due. Damn it, it's not working here. Uh-oh.
I can do it. Cousin JR
has done it again. Thank you, JR. He gifted Will Eubanks. Eubanks, welcome to the family. This is very upsetting that it's not letting me do this.
Yeah.
So let me do that.
Hold on. Why does all the Locked On guys look like failed child actors? Clark, let me just ask you a question. First off, I'm the only one in that bunch that looks like they could have been good enough to be an actor, for one. Two, why do all the Locked On guys? Why do all the Locked On guys? Not does, you fucking moron. Continue on, Mike.
Okay. All day, Trey, we appreciate you. He gifted a membership to Tennessee fan. Tennessee fan, welcome to the family. And last but not least, Alicia Olson, and she gave us $2. We appreciate you, Alicia. Gave to Zachary Qualls. Zachary, welcome to the family. How about for JR? Man, it's not letting me do any of my graphics now. This is very frustrating.
Well, see you next Monday if you want.
Huh?
Nothing.
Here, hold on. I know this is going to be awkward, but stay on the screen. I'll be right back.
It's just me. Welcome in, guys. Let me tell you how I feel about Hamas. Mike, you better come back or I'm going to ruin this entire live.
Uh-oh.
That right. I want this. This should be the screen. Go back.
There we go. I got all my graphics now.
God, I hate this.
I know. It's perfect. That's why we do it. All right. Let's talk. I want to talk. I know we, A&M, they're the flavor of the month, but I want to give, for JR, I want to give some love because he went down here to Starkville, and there's another game I got damn wrong again. But
what was that about? Why'd you do that?
I don't know. I thought they matched up well. I mean, Georgia, for all season, can't stop the pass. Mississippi State's got some good receivers. They can run the football. Well, hell, they sure as hell couldn't here on Saturday because Georgia put – this is the first time Georgia put together a full game. It's easy to sit here, hindsight 2020, Marler, but Mississippi State took a 7-0 lead. I was feeling great about it, and then Georgia scored 38 unanswered to dominate this football game. Is you kind of already alluded to it, and you're a Bamer. Georgia better than Bama?
Today. If they played that game, there's a big part of me that thinks that Kirby Smart would still find a way to fuck it up.
Yeah.
Georgia's not a world beater. I think Georgia's probably like I know they beat Ole Miss, but on a neutral field, I feel pretty good about Ole Miss. The A&M feels like they're the best team in the conference. It doesn't feel like there's necessarily a complete team in this conference right now. And A&M, like, great win against Mizzou, but if we're calling a spade, like I'm impressed.
Oh no, you're not going to be one of those guys that downgrades this 9-0 start, are you?
Not at all. I'm so impressed with A&M on the whole this season. Going 2 on the road against Notre Dame, the win they had in Baton Rouge. I mean, they ended a fucking coach's life, and that's dramatic, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And got
ended his career.
They held on the road against Arkansas. That game was a 10-point game until they scored super late. They boat race Florida, they boat race Mississippi State. Those are teams that have given people a really, really hard time this season. You saw Florida beat Texas, Mississippi State almost beat Texas, they almost beat Tennessee. Like, Auburn has given people fits, and they that game wasn't as close as the final score. The entire body of work, A&M is the best team in the conference this year. In this game, you were hinging your hopes for Missouri on whether or not they were going to be able to come out and have any success throwing the football to Kevin Coleman and whoever else. And they were going to have to do so with a true freshman quarterback who was the third stringer to start the year, and that without their tight end, who's one of the best safety blankets and safety nets, I think, in all college football, Brett Norfleet. He's out. It was an uphill battle. And you had the tweet that stood out the most to me, which was, hey, my name is Mike, I'm gay. And that was, I thought, really good. No, I'm kidding. You had the tweet that sent out to everyone that said, hey, this guy's 4 of 14 for 36 yards. 4 of 14 for 36 yards. Like, that's
you ain't going to win many games in this conference with that. You know what?
I think A&M's defense, like, they showed – I mean, dude, Cassius Howell's a problem. They're getting better. And, dude, and they don't have – like, they're an 18.5-point favorite against South Carolina this weekend. 18.5. It's at home. They get Samford, who didn't even have a head coach.
It's not enough. You know what?
Yeah.
I'm trying to find this. So when I picked Missouri to win, in all fairness, it was prior to
Missouri to win?
Yeah, you didn't see my whole Aggie dance and everything?
I didn't realize that's what it was because.
That was before I had seen this photo. And as soon as I saw this photo, I knew A&M was winning. Can you see Zoller's face? And this was not the A&M game. This was Vanderbilt. I was like, good God, this guy doesn't stand a prayer against A&M's nasty defense. But, yeah, that was the moment I knew I was going to look like a fool.
Yeah, that was tough. His eyes. Those eyes, that's a shocking photo.
Good. All right. How about how far do you think A&M can win it all?
I do. I mean, I think like if Marcel Reed can come out and not be, I mean, like Marcel Reed of old, like he still hasn't progressed in terms as a passer in terms of, hey, can I figure out a way to go complete 70% of passes? I think he's done that once this year. I didn't see the box score for this weekend. They've got all the talent in the world though, man. They've got all the talent in the world, and they're not even fully healthy. It's not like they've had – like, Missouri, outside of the quarterback situation, has remained pretty healthy for most of the year. up until this game. I think Elko is got them on a mission. Now, what I also love about them is them being 3-0 in true road games, and that's something I think carries, especially in the postseason. I always love, like Ohio State, I think, is the most talented team in the country with what they have on offense and what they can put on defense. And then you talk about like Indiana. I love Indiana, the way they play. Mendoza's incredible. I love their front four. And that's a team that I've hated for a minute because of how they schedule, but they are a very, very good football team. I tell you what, man, the receivers that you have, the 1-2 punch with Craver and Concepcion, is really good. Love the running backs for A&M. And if the defense can come along, the thing that this team has more than those is that they're battle tested and they've gone on the road and beaten Notre Dame. They've played a bunch of ranked opponents. They've come away with big wins. And then the other thing too is there's so many past A&M teams that would have fucking played with their food, figured out a way to keep this team in it. And in this game specifically, like they buried Florida early, they buried Mississippi State early. And then in this game specifically, it feels like that game was close for a minute because of how good Missouri's defense is. And then all of a sudden they get that picks or that fumble, whatever it would be called, the defensive touchdown that made it 14-0 for the half. And it was, our foot is on your throat and we're not fucking letting up, and it's ball game. And that was, I thought, really indicative of what good teams do. A&M in the past, that game against Auburn could have gotten dicey, or it could have been a look into the future of like, hey, this is how we're going to win games. And it's not going to be like, but that turned a corner and it was like, we know how to win games. We're going to go out here and physically dominate you. And I think that's the biggest difference between Elko and Jimbo's teams, is that like Elko just seems like he wants to fucking take your last breath. He seems like he wants to go out there and physically. And the halftime speech he had at LSU, dude, I thought that was awesome. And everything he has done with this team, the mental maturity and edge they come out and compete with is really, really impressive. And the last thing too, man, it's arguably the best offensive line in the country as well.
So you're saying Mike Elko takes your breath away?
Yeah.
What do you think of his massive nutsack? We got one of our users, his name Elko's massive nutsack, with the fake punt there against Missouri that was called at the perfect time and led to a damn near a 50-yard rush.
I don't remember that at all. We had Auburn on over here, and it was in the middle of work stuff for the pre-LSU Bama game, so I admittedly didn't see that. But
let me tell you, it was the damn call of the year, Chris, because it was right after Missouri had scored a touchdown, their first points of the game, and then A&M went 3-and-out on offense, and you're thinking, oh, buddy, we might have some momentum here for Missouri. And then they called the fake punt and gained, I believe, 46 yards on the rush. But
that's a big dick call there.
Did you see after the game, Missouri offensive lineman Caden Green say, "Man, I think that they knew what we were running. They were calling it out before we did it."
Yeah.
Did you have any thoughts on that?
Not really. I mean, I think that the one of the things Elko's done a really good job of is being prepared. And I think that the biggest thing too is, and it sounds so cliche, but like, again, I go back to that halftime speech he had against LSU. It's like, that's a situation where people could have panicked. And then A&M teams in the past probably have panicked. And he just very much approached that, like, they've got this. These are all things that have gone in their favor. Turnovers, the punt return or whatever, like, else happened in the first half of that game, and he's like, and they're up by fucking four. Like, you're the better team. Go out and fucking win. Like, it is a 60-minute fight with them, and I think that Marcel Reed, he is not a guy that's going to go out there and complete 80% of his passes. He's not going to be Diego. He's not going to be Ty Simpson, Julian Say, and that kind of shit. He is a very, very good quarterback, though, and he's so dangerous with, like, the weapons they have around him.
Mm-hmm. All right, how about Bama? Chris, winning 20-9 over LSU, as you read the comments here. Are you starting to get worried about Alabama at all?
Why? Because they won again?
Well, I don't know. They just seem seemingly less impressive. They can't rush the football. 50 yards rushing. It's not great. South Carolina, you know, I chalked that up to a tired team that needed a bye. I don't know that you can have that same excuse coming out of one with an interim coach that had to change your quarterback and only won by 11. And now a nasty defense, arguably the best defense, if not A&M, it's Oklahoma in the conference coming to town.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I think that it is a concern they can't run the football. That's the biggest concern. It's the best body of work of any team in the country, period. I don't give a shit about the Florida State loss. You can say whatever you want, but, like, it's the best. I mean, no one else has done what they've done in the history of the SEC, winning four straight games against SEC opponents. And that's a Missouri team on the road that still had Bo Prabula. That's the Vandy team that was still undefeated, and a Georgia team that was still undefeated. And they've done a tremendous – Tennessee team that still had their playoff hopes on the line. Like they did a phenomenal job during that stretch. They got through the South Carolina thing. And here's the biggest thing. It is funny to me that LSU, the takeaway has now become like, well, you know, yeah, Mara, that's not going to happen. But, I mean, that's okay. I think that the idea that there's questions, I think, is valid. Like, they cannot run the football very well or at all. I think that Jam Miller has been – it's so bizarre to me how little – he tries to get north and south sometimes. It feels – or sometimes there's times he can bounce stuff outside and he refuses to do it, and he kind of tiptoes his way into the hole a lot. And, like, this weekend, the one thing that you think you're most confident in with him as a player is his pass rush ability – or, I'm sorry, pass pro ability. And I thought that was something that kind of went away. But this is still an LSU team that I understand they're 5-4. I understand they've gotten beat by other teams and all that kind of shit. This is a war every single year these teams play each other. To hold that team to 9 points, which is the lowest they've had on the season, and to figure out a way, like, you ran Garrett Nussmeier out of the game. They were just as – like, Alabama's biggest issue is being able to stop the run outside of being able to run the ball, and they were dominant up front against LSU. Again, this defense, like, people keep saying it's like bend but don't break or whatever. But the idea that they were able to go out there and hold them to like 50 or less than 60 yards rushing on 20 something attempts, really, really impressive. They turn you over constantly. They lead the SEC in forced turnovers. I think they had at least two more this past week. I know they had at least one, but I want to say it was at least two as well. But they have done a really, how many was it, Mike?
Three fumbles lost. And yeah, three fumbles lost.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, they do, and also Bray Hubbard should have had an interception in the end zone. I will say this. Every year I hear, and I love Baton Rouge. I really do. I think LSU is a great program. Every year I hear this game specifically, how this is like they are going to turn a corner, and at some point they need to start talking about this game in a realistic way. And I mean everyone. I mean everyone. Like, because I think the idea that Bama has a ton of issues and isn't that great of a team is probably more so – people hoping they're not, and looking back at the Florida State game because it's low-hanging fruit to make jokes out of. But it's a team that has just beaten LSU for the 13th time in the last 15 games. 10 of those 13 wins were by double digits. This is not a rivalry. I mean, it's not a rivalry right now. And so I thought that was really impressive. And, yeah, well, I mean, this weekend's going to be tough against a really, really good Oklahoma defense. I think Oklahoma's offense is not that great. But it'll be the biggest test they have. I think.
Are you allowed to say that living where you live? It's not a rivalry.
I mean, don't clip it. But, like, I mean, I think it's fair. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's very fair to say.
Well, I mean, how many teams are beating Bama? I mean, don't you take that into consideration?
Who?
That's what I'm saying. Like aside from Georgia, who beats Bama?
Georgia doesn't beat – what are you talking about? Georgia doesn't beat Bama.
Well, that's what I mean. Literally, hardly anybody beats Alabama. Listen,
you guys are the ones that have positioned this whole thing with Bama, how the dynasty is dead. They're terrible. They're
right. How many titles do they have? Non-COVID. When's the last non-COVID title for Bama?
Why does the non-COVID one not count, Mike?
Because –
did you want one of the best offensive teams in the history of college football to beat everyone's ass by – 40 with 80,000 people in, that would have made it more solidified?
I can prove that the COVID year was complete bullshit.
Okay.
Jimbo went 9-1. You don't need any other evidence than that. But if you did need evidence, how about, you know, they didn't do the non-conference. The fans were...
So they had to play more SEC games.
Right. There was no fans. You know, it was like less fans.
Yeah.
That was a big one. There was like weird COVID testing. Here's another example. You want to talk LSU, Bama?
Mm-hmm.
They had a damn player meeting after several players had quit. And this was not just LSU. This was basically everybody except for Bama. That's why I think it's horseshit. But they had a players only meeting. Hey, we are not quitting. We're not tanking. And then several key players quit. before Bama, and then they quit immediately after Bama. I mean, what other year do we have players just exiting the program? And I'm not talking like one or two. I'm talking like, I think 30% of the players quit.
I don't know. Either way, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, Mac Jones, that offensive line, that defense, Patrick Surtain was on that team. Najee Harris had 30 touchdowns. It was the best team in the country that year. It wasn't particularly close. Either way, though, I think that moving forward, like I get what you're saying about like, yeah, like the comparison is the same as it is to other teams. But I'm also saying that like the national media especially and fans especially have turned this into a whole like, well, Bama's not that good because they lost to Florida State or because they lost four games last year. And I'm like, they're a beatable team. Like they are a very flawed team in terms of what they do well and don't do well. And if you can figure out ways to exploit that, then I think they can get beat. But here's the thing too, Mike, no one's figured out a way to do it yet besides Florida State in week one. Like Georgia could have buried their season and then got cued on fucking fourth and one. Right. And like, I mean, like Vandy fumbles going into like the inside the 10 yard line when they were probably going to go up, 14-0. Every team's had their chance to knock them off. And the gauntlet they went through to get here, like anybody could have put a second loss on that schedule and then made them play with like the tightest of buttholes the rest of the year, trying to get through to the playoff at a 10-2 record. But now you're looking up and there's three games left and you're praying, if you're not a fan of this team, that, well, hopefully Oklahoma and the most fucking inconsistent quarterback in the world, John Mateer, can come out here and complete 60. John Mateer will throw a pass, throw an interception, I think, before the whistle blows on Saturday.
What's inconsistent about these numbers?
8 touchdowns passing, 7 interceptions. What an electric year for the kid. Listen, he's a really good player, but like he is very, very mistake prone. Very mistake prone. And he's going to go up against a defense that forces you into those mistakes. It's going to be an ugly, low-scoring game, but it should be a good one. We'll see. I mean, it's the next one in line. Another top 10 opponent Bama's going to have to beat. Luckily, they get it at home.
I just think it's funny. You said A&M's number one.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, I think you said Georgia 2. And then I'm asking you if Bama's number 2. And you're like, well, of course they're number 2.
I'll say, of course, they're number 2. I said number 2 because of the shit, Mike.
They're all number 2. Okay. Well, speaking of number 2, you know who the real number 2 is?
Number 2.
Florida is the real number 2 because they're shitty. God, man. All the accolades here of Kentucky. This is the largest victory they've had over the Florida Gators. 31 points since 1970. First time since 1955 that Kentucky's beaten Florida. 3 straight games in Lexington. Kentucky had not won an SEC game and a home game in 10 tries. Last time was they beat Billy Napier's Gators. But man, oh man. And Florida had a
Hold on. I'm reading the comments, which is a mistake. I haven't read the comments for most of the entire episode because all it is just like it's fucking 3 people commenting on my weight, which is great. He was flawless and then he broke his thumb. Talking about John Mateer. How early in the season was that, man? Here's another way to look at it. Maybe John Mateer started fucking playing teams that were worth a shit. Like maybe Mateer had to go out and actually play some opponents instead of dog walking an Auburn team that has a worse secondary maybe in the conference. And also, by the way, needed a bunch of trick plays and fucking help from the refs to do it. Maybe that's what happened with John Mateer when he was good. I heard this kid was going to be the best quarterback in the country, the second coming of fucking Jesus and all this stuff. He's got 14 touchdowns and 7 interceptions on the year. Like, I don't know how else you want me to buy into what I'm looking at from the numbers. He's not an effective passer. He constantly makes mistakes and throws interceptions. Like, he's a good quarterback. He's not a great quarterback. He's not an above average quarterback in this league. Like, he has proven that every single time he steps on the field.
Yeah, but he got hurt.
South Carolina offense and put up like 150 yards. Like, what are we talking about? It's not trashing Oklahoma. I said over and over, they have a really good defense. They have the best defensive front 4 in the SEC, maybe one of the best in the country. And they are going to give Alabama fits on Saturday with them trying to, like, Bama shouldn't even try to run the ball. Like if you have Simpson come out here and throw 50 times, I would probably be open to that idea. Cause I don't think they have anybody that's going to be able to run the ball past 2 yards on this Oklahoma defense. But if you're going to get sensitive about the fact that, like, well, you're trashing Oklahoma, no. This is a flawed Oklahoma team. Are they unbeaten, Mike? Am I wrong about that? Did they lose at home to Ole Miss?
I think they did.
Did they get their ass beat by Texas? Did they escape Auburn, who's dog shit, and then also like needed all the help in the world from the refs to do that? Like, are we talking about the same team?
What? Hey, conspiracy theory. John Mateer never hurt his hand. He's just so bad. They were like, fuck, we got to say something, yeah, right? Before we go into this Texas game and get annihilated, we'll make that the center of the attention. No one will focus on his performance. They're just going to ask questions about, you know, we got Eddie in the bushes. Why are you practicing indoors? What's going on here? You know, but maybe it was all a diversion. And clearly it didn't work, but maybe it was a diversion.
It's like they're a good football team in certain areas. I don't think they're a great football team at all. They have shown that. They have two losses, and we're going into week 12. But both of the newcomers in this league are kind of trying to position, at different times of the season especially, their teams as being these like really, really good football teams. And then somehow, it's like, you know, you're really good at defense. Like, you have a really good defense. You have struggles on offense. You have that, sure. Like, what?
We figured it out. Yeah. That's why he hates Tennessee, too. That's why
John throws all those interceptions, because you guys beat Bama last year. No. Like, it's crazy to me that listen, and Oklahoma fans don't want to hear this, but I'll say it to you since apparently no one else will. You guys are just right now, the way that you're talking about this team, you are basically just a crimson and cream colored version of Texas. Like, all the shit that we had to hear about people saying, Arch Manning is so great, dude. This offense will be so great. No. That didn't happen for most of the season. You guys are doing the same thing. The team that you hate most and the fans of that team have done all year, you're doing that exact same thing. Like, stop trying to make Mateer a thing right now. He has not been for most of the season. But maybe against a really good Alabama defense on the road, all of those issues that I just mentioned that he's put on display over and over and fucking over again are all just going to dissipate and go away.
You know, that sounds crazy. But I can't disagree with anything you just said. They're crimson, and they're a crimson Texas. That's all they are. It's the same damn thing, except Arch Manning's playing better. Now yes. I think John Mateer, you could say, was, you know, not, he wasn't fantastic against Tennessee, but he got the win, so maybe he's getting better. And they're starting to run the ball a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's a place where you would have to start if you're going to go up against this Bama defense. Like, and maybe they will. I think that's a much better option at trying to win this game is running the ball at Alabama, because I don't know if Bama can stop it for 60 minutes. No team has done that consistently. But also, like, if you're watching Mateer play and you're telling me with a serious face that kid is going to go out on the road and throw for however many yards, complete this many percentage of passes, and then throw this many touchdowns without an interception, I'll have to see it to believe it. Because I haven't seen him do it to anybody besides, like, fucking Temple. So,
right. And he almost had about three interceptions against Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a bunch of drops. And I'm looking at it now. So he had 159 passing against Tennessee. 223 against Ole Miss, 150 against Carolina.
Wow, that's incredible, dude. Heisman.
202 against Texas, 271 against Auburn. I mean, you might be right.
Pretty much exactly everything I said.
And he's got three touchdowns, four interceptions in SEC play.
Hell yeah, dude. But listen, dude, three touchdowns for a guy that was told that he was going to be a Heisman winner, like, that's really good.
Now, that's just passing. Now, he's got two more rushing.
Wow. Dude, give him a fucking Heisman. That's awesome. What a year.
He was good against Michigan. I don't have respect for Michigan, but
about what he's done this season. But I'm sure I hate your team.
Okay, well, on that note, we were talking about Kentucky finally doing something. Marler's like, fuck Oklahoma. How about the next coach of the Oklahoma Sooners, Mark Stoops, coming back, saving his job up here in Lexington, putting a whooping on old DJ and company. Yeah. Again, Florida was favored in this game. And I saw a Kentucky Sports Radio pregame video. You know, they were walking around the tailgates. Every one of those damn fans was like, I just want a close game. Can we get a win? Like, they, none of them thought they were going to whoop Florida's ass, right? Yet they did it. How impressed are you with that?
I was very impressed. And like, Mark Stoops, I almost said Mark Richt. Mark Stoops took this team from, this could have, I thought they were going to go 2-10, man, or 3-9. I really did. I looked at this, I was like, no way they beat Auburn on the road. I think Auburn, wasn't Auburn coming off a bye or something? Maybe I'm wrong about that. They had Florida at home, which I thought was going to be a loss. Were they coming off a bye, or I'm stupid?
They just coming off a win.
Not even close. Yeah, they were coming off a win. That makes more sense. Arkansas's defense took a bye that week. No, I think Kentucky, what Stoops has done to put himself in position to potentially go to a bowl game with how disastrous the start of this year was, really, really impressive. Go back to Kentucky. So whoever they're playing next week, or this week,
Tennessee undefeated Tennessee Tech. The best team in the state, brother.
Not good. Not good. No, it'll be tough to close it out with those two final two games on the road, especially. But I thought this game, especially, man, you want to talk about just changing a narrative and being able to like to turn something on its head. This was a Florida Kentucky series that from like I think 80 to like 2017, Florida had one loss to Kentucky. I know from 87 on, they had one loss in like 32 years. And if you look at the last 40 years, they have five losses to Kentucky now. Four of those have come in the last 5 years. You have totally changed the landscape of this rivalry, where Kentucky kind of has owned Florida since 2020 in the COVID year that didn't count. And so I think it's been really impressive from Mark Stoops. It's been really, really great from what he's done with this program. And especially, man, like this is the hardest part of this. In this day and age with NIL and the transfer portal, when so many people can leave and go from like to school to school and situation to situation, seek out more money, and it gives you, it almost like it gives you more of a reason to do so if you're a student athlete in this day and age. To have this team still be bought in enough to go beat Auburn on the road, hold them to 3 points, and then come home and beat the shit out of Florida and maybe possibly in DJ Lagway's, you know, tenure in Gainesville. I thought that was incredibly impressive and a great job from the coaching staff being able to get this team to buy in. And also a credit to the players for being able to buy in and get out of their own way, besides Zach Calzada and that video, which was unbelievable. my God, I didn't know he had that much street cred, by the way. Jesus Christ. That guy's from like fucking Duluth, Georgia. And he's like, hey, keep count, Garrett. Hey, keep count, Garrett.
Well, I tell you what old Zach Calzada should do with all that greenery he's got. Head on over to hollowsocks.com. Go check them out, brother. They got all kinds of different socks for us, Chris. We got the crew. That's what Chris wears. We got the ankle. That's what Papaw wears. And then we got the boot. That's what Shane wears. So we got you covered over here. These are tactical hunting socks. Yeah. You can't beat them, Chris. You just can't. Go check them out. Hollowsocks.com. They're right now, Chris, buy three, get three for our listeners over at hollowsocks.com. So go check them out. Cannot recommend this enough. You know, as soon as I did my Aggie dance, I put on my hollow socks. I wanted to feel more like a man again, and I had to do that by putting on these hollow socks. So go check them out, hollowsocks.com, 3 for $3 right now. And I can tell you, Chris does not wear hollow based on his Oklahoma takes, but we're going to send him some, and that'll fix his failures when it comes to
survive tornadoes, survive comments about your bad quarterback play. Jesus Christ.
They're not made in hollow, or excuse me, hollow's not made in Oklahoma. So I'll tell you.
Yeah, very, very true.
All right. So, hey, how about this weekend, man? We got some hell of a matchups. You kind of already started to tackle some of them, but thoughts on Texas coming off a bye, fighting for their playoff lives. I would make the case they don't have to go 9-3. They're putting it in the committee's hands, which is always dangerous. 10-2, they're a lock. But so this very well may be a playoff and elimination for them. It won't be for Georgia. Thoughts on this hell of a matchup here in Athens?
Dude, it feels like we should be talking more about it. I don't know how we haven't been. I'm so excited for this game, for one. This is a great, great matchup. Arch Manning, very few players have been playing as well as him. over the last few weeks. I think that them going on the road is going to be, we're still upset about Tennessee. That's why they're so upset. Oh, because I had the one take wrong about your season. That's my bad, guys. I should have never said that. So happy y'all beat Tennessee on the road by 6 points. That's a fucking huge win. Feather in the cap, guys. Leave this one up for a minute, Mike. This is the first time I just haven't had the comments up because it's just fucking unbelievable. Get hobbies or something, or just get new jokes. Best joke for next week. I will buy you a pair of hollow socks and then smother you with them until you get back to sleep. So, back to Georgia Tech's game. I think it's a very interesting matchup because this is a Georgia defense for the first time, I think, in a very long time. You're looking at a Georgia team that has not been able to get people get enough stops consistently. I mean, even the 21 points to Mississippi State was kind of surprising. That game was a blowout, but that was kind of surprising. They got stops when they needed them most against Ole Miss. They have played with fire for most of the year, and they're playing a Texas team that is backs against the wall with one of the best quarterbacks right now in the conference. The team's getting healthier and by far one of the best defenses in the entire country. I think Texas is very good, and if they get to 9-3, I think the committee will absolutely put them in the playoff. I would have so much more faith in Texas to beat A&M than I would Georgia because they are going on the road in a very hostile environment at home for Georgia in a place they've lost two games since 2017. One of those to Alabama by 3 points, one to a South Carolina team in double overtime because they had a missed field goal and three interceptions. They lost that game by 3-2. So I think that what Georgia is going to be able to do from in front of the home crowd at night in Sanford, I think that's enough to win. I will tell you, I think that Gunnar Stockton, it's going to be interesting to see how he responds to this because Steve Sarkisian is a phenomenal play caller always. And I think that they will do stuff with this defense, with a bye week especially, trying to figure out some of their pain points and pressure points of where they're vulnerable on the back end. The secondary, this is the worst secondary I've seen Georgia play, I feel like, for the past 2 years in quite some time. And Glenn Schumann, his stock as a head coach has all but fallen off a fucking cliff in comparison to where it was at the start of the year or 2 years ago. But it's still a very good team, and they're able to figure out ways to win. And Mike Bobo has coached his ass off, dude. They have been great offensively. So that part's been great. I think, like I said, very close game. I like Georgia to win, but I also think it's going to be a very big struggle early. I would not be surprised if this game looked a little bit like Tennessee last year, where Georgia comes out, Tennessee or Texas punches them in the mouth. They're able to score first when they're on script, especially with Sark. It's also, dude, I didn't know this stat. As good as Georgia has been, but since 2020, I think in 77 games, the other team has scored first in 31 of those. That's shocking to me with how good Kirby Smart's defense has been, especially in some of those years. I kind of expect it to be a little bit like that Tennessee game a year ago, maybe not a blowout on Georgia's end, but the way it started, where Texas comes out, they'll probably score first, be really good on script, maybe get a stop or two because of how good their defense is, phenomenal at rushing the passer. Georgia's been very banged up on the offensive line, even though they've gotten better throughout some of the weeks. That's what this game is. I think it's won and lost, but I think ultimately Georgia probably wins this game. I don't think they cover, though.
Did you get that stat from SEC this morning? Did you watch any of that today?
No, I saw Cole Kubik tweet it out yesterday.
Because there was some stat they ran, it was similar, where it was – what's that?
Like Kirby Smart is 28-3 in games where they've scored first.
Yeah, Georgia has a better record when the other team scores first.
Yeah. Well, so
that's insane.
Cole Kubik tweeted out that Georgia since 2020 is 28-3 in games where the other team has scored first. And I've said this for the past couple of years before the Tennessee game. One of the biggest anomalies, I feel like, in college football, Tennessee has scored first in six straight years against Georgia. Or maybe it's five straight, I don't know. And they've lost every single one of those games. And you look at the way that Heupel offenses start, it's been very impressive. And I thought it was just a standalone thing with Tennessee. But when he said the 28-3 record, my first thought was holy shit. That means they allowed 31 teams to score first. And dude, you think about some of those defenses in 2021 and 2022, that how good they were. I mean, that stat was shocking to me. 31 out of 77 teams. Hold on. Should have done this already. Yeah, over 40% of their games, the other team has scored first.
That is wild to think about. I wanted to ask you about this. Is it a rivalry? I don't know. Georgia, Texas. Of all the new games we get in this new look SEC, do you think this is the best emerging rivalry other than Marler versus Sooner fans?
Well, you know, Texas has about as many wins against Georgia as Sooner fans have against me in terms of logic. So that's the one thing.
I mean, is there a better? I mean, maybe Oklahoma, Tennessee, but I don't know. I think it's Texas, Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the new teams in the league, especially I would agree with that. I will say I don't think it's much of a rivalry. I think it's the two best programs we thought would be the two best programs. I think what I would love to fucking see, man, is Ole Miss versus Texas because of Sark versus Lane. And I would love to see that more than we've got. I think what's also weird too is from the rivalry standpoint. This is the third time these two teams will play in their first 2 years of being in the conference. Georgia still hasn't even gone to College Station. They've played Texas A&M once in the last 14, 15 years, or whatever the year is. But I think it's a very good one. I think it's when you talk about amassing talent and just the roster, blue chip ratio, all that kind of stuff that goes into play and the talent and NFL draft picks that are on display. I think with this matchup specifically this year, last year was awesome because it's man, both these teams are going to have probably double-digit draft picks. Both of them have a ton of first-day guys, and there's so much talent that's going to be on the field, and you're in this electric environment, Texas first year. I don't see it that way this year. I do think that you're going to see a lot, in the 2027 draft, so a lot of the younger guys now, this game, that you're going to have a ton of young talent that is going to be day one draft picks, I think, in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and he would never admit this, Chris, but Kirby, obviously, he's always got but he's very competitive. That kind of goes without saying. But he's been losing some key in-state talent to Texas.
Yeah.
That makes this kind of even more personal, I would think, to him.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, Kirby's lost. Georgia is one of the most talent-rich states in the country. It's everyone talks about California, Texas, and Florida. I think that's bullshit. I think it's Texas, Florida, and Georgia, hands down. Like the amount of NFL talent, the amount of five stars and elite recruits and blue chip players that come out of the state of Georgia every year is incredible. And so he's lost players before. He lost a bunch to Alabama. He's lost some to other teams. I think you know, there's a couple dating. This isn't to Kirby, but there's a couple of players from back in the day. Derek Rogers, remember that kid that went to Tennessee? There's a lot of players that he has lost and Georgia has lost over the years to other teams outside the state. I say all that to also say that very few of those, none that we know with tangible evidence, but very few of those are players that were all but wrapped up to go to Georgia and then last minute decided to go to Texas because they got a bigger bag. And that's I think what is frustrating to him. And I tell you, the thing he said today, there's a lot of coach speak that I don't think I take a lot of, I don't listen to a bunch. I think there's a lot of coaches that just say whatever. Kirby made a comment today about one of the things that's changed with this team is they're starting to practice the right way. And I have said this over and over, the Georgia teams we've seen years they come out and they play Oregon and beat the shit out of Oregon 42-3 to start the year. And there's years where they come out and from jump, they are killing people. But the way that some of these last couple teams have been and way we've seen even some of the 2021 season, it's this very slow start to the year and they don't start peaking till about right now. Now, I don't know if this team's doing that. I thought Saturday was a really good start, considering they ran for 300 yards, but also a week before that was the struggle they had against Florida. So it'll be interesting to see if they're peaking or if Texas, with all the talent, is finally able to put everything together for four quarters, because even against Vanderbilt, they weren't able to do that.
Hey, shout out Stephen Jones, Jerry's son, I think. What do you think the Aggs have to do to get more recognition? Best team in the SEC right now? feel like they're getting a lot of recognition, but we haven't recognized their game. Well, first of all, do you agree with that? And we have not really recognized the Carolina matchup other than them being a massive favorite.
I mean, they got to beat Oklahoma. Oklahoma is the best team in the country, and I think that if A&M is not able to beat Oklahoma this year, then even if they win the national championship, there should be an asterisk. You know, listen, the road to a title in any sport goes through the state of Oklahoma, and that's the bottom line. And so if Texas A&M is too much a bunch of cowards to actually play a schedule that includes the Sooners on it, they ran away from the Big 12, from the SEC, specifically because they were scared of them. And if they don't go ahead and play them, then I'm not even – like, don't even give them the trophy. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
I don't know what else they have to do. I think it's funny because, like, they – I mean, they just took Missouri spirit so quickly in that game. I wish that I would have, in the context of what was going on, seen the fake punt, because even you describing it, like, that's just such a next-level coaching move for Mike Elko. It's like – I said this a couple of weeks ago, and I'll say it again. A&M is a team that gets so much hate because of how fucking weird they are. Like, the class ring thing is stupid. The male cheerleaders, the midnight yell, the whoop, hump it ags, all that stuff. It's you know.
That's my anthem now. You can't make fun of that.
That's your ringtone. But it's stuff that everyone can point and laugh at and say, this is stupid. This is blah, blah. Like, make all these, like I said, low-hanging fruit jokes about. And I get it. One thing I've always respected about A&M is they don't really give a shit about any of that. Like, they just know who they are. And that's just who they are. They don't care that other teams make fun of it. Like, you don't have to get it. What you're seeing now, though, with this resurgence and emergence under Mike Elko, is he is making A&M like a cool team to watch, cheer for, and it's like appointment television. Like, that those games in Kyle Field, like the entrance onto the field, the way they come out, the way that environment is just fucking rocking is awesome. It's awesome for college football, and I feel like it's going to become, especially in the NIL era, one of the more premier programs if they can just get consistent coaching, which it seems they've been able to do. So give me part of that $9.99.
Hey, shout out Tennessee Legend. They just gifted 5 memberships, Chris, after sending you some fine Tennessee whiskey, if I'm not mistaken. That's Cherokee great. Cooch, he's a Sooner, so you won't like that, Chris. Jake Buka, Wesley Loonley, Texas Boy, and Wyatt Funderburk, and Bryce Lewis. Welcome.
No, don't take away Cherokee Cooch's one until he gets over the Tennessee the wrong prediction for the Tennessee Oklahoma game. He doesn't get a membership. And then when he says that he's over it, I will buy his membership.
Hey, SEC Sean says the only reason Texas has it floated off into the Gulf because Oklahoma sucks so hard.
That's right.
And he also gifted a membership. Hell yeah, SEC Sean. He gifted to Lucy Brucey. Lucy, welcome to the family. Lucy,
that was my name in prison, dude. I love that. That's great.
Lucy Marler. Well, hey, so we know Carolina, obviously not a great year.
No.
Any shot to beat A&M on the road 2 weeks to prepare?
I really just hope they cover the spread. That's going to be a tough thing to cover if they don't. I like A&M coming off a big game. I want to look at this and say South Carolina is going to figure stuff out in the bye week. It'll be interesting. I'm very invested to see what the offense looks like.
No Shula. What if it's amazing, just like Auburn offense without Freeze?
I would, even if they lost by 7, that would be awesome. Like, if they're able to score 300, I'm sorry, if they're able to score 30 points, if they're able to score 300 points, it'd be pretty awesome. If they're able to score 30 points, I guess this A&M defense, which again, they've been vulnerable at times and they've got some holes. I think, you know, it would be great. I don't see it happening. I like every time I want to get excited about like this game for South Carolina, I'm like, well, they're coming off the bye. And then I keep thinking of like, well, they were coming off a fucking bye last year against Ole Miss and they lost 27-3. Also, you have, because of how bad that beating was in Columbia last year, A&M now has a chip on their shoulder, or at least the ability to sell the players on one from Mike Elko. And like, this could get ugly. Like, this could get ugly. And also, dude, they have South Carolina and Samford. Like, this may be your biggest, like, ramp up against good on good or good on almost good since South Carolina struggled to get ready for that Texas game. So it'll be interesting to see what that looks like.
How about the Lane Kiffin Bowl, Florida at Ole Miss? I don't know if you've seen this yet. He just had his press conference this afternoon, but Kiffin was asked multiple times about, you know, what do you value in a job? Why would the Florida job be a trick? You know, I mean, just they're all dancing around it. Does that make any intrigue into this game that, you know, Ole Miss is obviously a massive favorite. They should win, but, you know, it's a little awkward.
It's the biggest game in program history, Mike. Some are calling it the biggest game in Ole Miss program history. And that is shocking. I don't think it's the biggest game in program history. It'll be interesting to see what he does with the theatrics, because he just can't help himself. I mean, part of me wishes he would have just answered point blank to those questions, like money's the most important thing, and then just kept it moving. Dude, Florida is coming off a 31-point loss to Kentucky. They're also in the same vein of what I said last year with South Carolina versus A&M and that chip on your shoulder. There's no way to overlook this team because they beat you and took your playoff hopes a year ago. It's a revenge game. They're at home. It's their last home game of the year. It's senior night. There's all these things. I think it's being played at night for some unfucking known reason, which is horseshit. That means I have to start my day at 11 a.m. watching the South Carolina A&M game with my computer in the press box at LSU, cover LSU Arkansas, and then stay there, I guess, for Bama Oklahoma to figure out what goes on in that game so I don't have to sit in traffic for an hour. The fact that this got a night game is fucking mind-blowing to me. So thanks a lot, ESPN. Is it a night game, or am I wrong about that? It is a night game, right?
I'm looking it up right now. But, 7 o'clock. Well, 6 o'clock our time, 7 Eastern.
Okay. You don't know what time I'm in, ever. So, anyway, but no, I it'll be interesting. I think this ends up looking like Florida is about to roll over and die.
They may have already done it, right?
DJ Lagway sucks so bad. 12 interceptions on the year, 11 touchdowns. It'll be the whole thing will be very interesting because Ole Miss is barreling down an 11-1 record if they can just close out. And I think the biggest difference between this year with Lane Kiffin, despite all the rumors and all that kind of shit, he has figured out a way to keep this team focused and hungry. And I think they're going to come out. They're not going to play with their food. I don't know if it'll be as bad. I don't remember the final score of this game. But for whatever reason to me, it feels like what they did last year to Duke when it's like we have to go prove a point. That's what this one feels like. Also, we got to cut it short because I got to pee.
Can I ask you real quick, final thing I wanted to ask you, Golden Boot, what's the vibes down there with Nussmeier getting benched and Michael Van Buren? Is that dynamic odd?
Do you know how much that boot weighs?
It's like 50 pounds?
175.
It's close.
But like, I would be so fucking mad if I just played a three-hour football game and they're like, all right, here's your trophy. It's like, and I have to have a workout now. I have to lift this fucking 200-pound trophy over my head. That sounds awful.
It weighs about the same as Elko's massive nutsack.
Yeah, that's true. So the vibes are not great. People are upset with and frustrated with Nuss. You know, it's weird, man. That sack that he had, this is like kind of like a perfect microcosm, but picture into how frustrated the fan base is. He was 18-21 on Saturday night against Bama. He was by all means, he was pretty good. And they obviously lost. They weren't necessarily in that game late, and he got benched for it. But that sack that he took that everyone was so mad about, that took out everything. Like that took out all the you know, goodwill towards him and well, he's a fifth-year senior and kind of excuses that people make for him. And that's probably not the best word to use for it. But I feel bad for Nussmeier, man. Like, dude, Mike, hear me out on this. He's been bad this year, and I don't know what you do with him. I don't know if you let him continue to play most of the games if he's not helping the team win. Like, I don't know if it's a mental issue, like where he's like – he's taken a step back, and I don't know what caused it. The offensive line has been dog shit for the entire year, and like, especially in comparison to last year's team, is totally different. I don't know what the right answer is. Because also, it's a kid, though, that in this day and age, you got a fifth-year senior to come back and give up going into potentially a first-round draft pick. And people that think that's stupid because I always played this year, He was a preseason projected first round draft pick going into this year. And there are several scouts that said even last year he would have been a top round pick if he came out early. This situation that he has found himself in now sucks. The Van Buren thing is very weird because I thought he would play. I thought they would also have some like packages for him where he'd be like designed runs and like things like that. Zero design runs for him. He got some RPOs and things. Do you figure out a way to figure out who gives you the best option of winning and put Van Buren in? Like today, Frank Wilson said nothing's changed and Nussmeier is going to be the starter, but they will also evaluate throughout the week and figure out they're both going to play. He also said that. You got to score points against Arkansas, man. Like Arkansas's defense is fucking horrible, but that offense is very, very good. And you cannot – like I got a coworker that said he's just dreading the idea – that they're going to show up in this game on Saturday and people are going to boo Nuss because he's given so much to that program. And it's just come to like the worst fucking crashing end that you could imagine. It just sucks. I don't even know what else to say about it. It just sucks.
Well, can I say this? I think could it help him for the NFL? Because that's what life is sometimes where things don't go your way. You know, maybe the fans hate you. You know, you got what do you do? What do you show up and do you show up and do your job? Because that's what they're looking for in the NFL. I think so many of these quarterbacks go to the NFL, they're not ready. Right. I think he'll be ready for everything that comes with being an NFL quarterback. Obviously, I don't think he's healthy. I don't think he's getting the protection. There's a lot of issues. I think there's a world where NFL teams watch him and if they still believe in his talent, they'll say, damn, like if he finishes strong and closes the season better than he's looked, I think they'll be, I'm not saying he's number one pick or anything, but no. I think they'll be impressed with how he handles his business.
I tell you what, the fans that are looking at this through a lens of like, well, he's crying after games. Like what a bitch. Or like, what, like, you know, that's so ridiculous. Like you're like, you've sucked all year. And we're not like, they're the only ones with that sentiment. I guarantee you there's not a single NFL GM that's looking at that happening and saying, wow, like what a soft player or what an idiot or like right. whatever. Like this kid, and again, you have to also include, if you're looking at this through the lens of like in this day and age of football, you have to include the NIL part of it and like the transfer portal part of it and not with what he has done. Good one, Sean. So they have like in this day and age, you have all these players that will like willingly sit out of games, want to leave, go other places. This is not a kid that was like, I'm demanding this amount of money or I'm going pro. This was, hey, will you stay? And like, are people upset about the cuss words?
I think they're just angry in general. Come on, dude.
Like, you know what? Listen, I'll tell you what.
Some of us mad you took the Lord's name in vain. I mean,
for an hour every week, I come on the show in the middle of my workday because I love Mike and I love doing the show. But for an hour every week, I don't have it up here right now. There's over 360 comments right now, and I guarantee you 200 of them are some horrible dog shit joke about my weight, my face, something else I said wrong, or what the fuck ever. If you're upset about a cuss word, then watch something fucking else. Period. Sorry, Mike, this is your audience, not mine.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah, off. I don't need it. Yeah. Just come on the show and dog the audience for me.
Don't put yourself in a situation where somebody's just making fun of you for an hour straight in the comments and you don't hear it. You have to read through it the entire fucking time while you're trying to pay attention and then sit here and be like, you need to watch your mouth. Shut the fuck up.
Well, I know who likes you is Tennessee Legend. We are working on making a King Cake flavored liquor to send your way, Marler. Not widely known about. New product just for you, buddy.
I love it, dude. I love it. The liquor or the whiskey or bourbon he sent was fantastic. I did not like the blackberry, but Allie loved it. Okay, last thing I'll say, and then I gotta pee.
I'm really just trying to get you to piss yourself here.
I'm about to do it. I'm about to just go in this giant wonton soup. I think the thing with Nussmeier is he didn't demand a bunch of money. He didn't say, I'm going pro if you don't give me this. There was nothing like that. This is what quarterbacks in the SEC make now. He honestly makes kind of on the low end in comparison from his valuation, in comparison to some other players in the SEC who also haven't had great years. You cannot sit here and say, thank you, Clarko. You cannot sit here and say that he deserves to be ridiculed because he's lost games. him crying after the Bama game, him crying over whatever other game, it's not anything to do with him being frustrated about being benched, him being like, you know, mad at the, like, that no one around, you haven't seen him yell at somebody in practice, you know, like, or blame anyone else in post game stuff. You haven't seen him do anything that would show bad leadership at all. He's just not having a good year, and he's surrounded by a group that's also not having a good year. So that's all I got to say. I got to run.
It feels like you can relate. If you need to cry on this show, I support you. We appreciate you, buddy. We'll catch you on the next Marler Monday, and I'll be on his show Locked On later in the week.
All right. See you, bro.
Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the Pirate, and the Pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.